Play Date with Sarah Jones is a production of PRI and Sarah Jones.
Hello?
It's Play Date.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. Okay, come on up.
Hey, you made it. Shoes off, please. It's New York. It's dirty out there. Through the hallway we go here.
Do you remember what it was like as a little kid to pick up a crayon or a pencil and draw your family or your house, recreate your world with just a simple line on paper? Or maybe, like me, you got into trouble for drawing outside the lines. I mean, like way outside. Like the time I took a red marker to the white walls of our apartment when I was 3. They did not make washable marker back then. My parents were not pleased. But when Chantel Martin was little, she also started drawing with a simple line on walls and curtains and under her bed, but she never stopped. And she has followed that line from her childhood in London to a career that's taken her to galleries and museum shows around the world and environments ranging from MIT to New York Fashion Week, where she drew with her signature black marker all over a pristine white Lexus. With Lexus's permission, it's important to say. Those are just a few of the places Chantel has traveled with that black marker of hers. And when I asked her which honors and accolades she wanted me to mention in her introduction...
Personally, I don't like any of that stuff.
Good. How, what do you like?
It's, you know, because those are just lists and things that other people have approved.
Right.
You know, I quite simply draw and do what I love.
You're very young to have figured that out. As old as I am, it's taken me many days on the planet to realize that's the only resume you need at a certain point. First of all, I should say I'm Lorraine, but it doesn't matter. I'm not the important one here. When Sarah first saw you live drawing, you were standing in front of a big canvas and you're live drawing in harmony with musicians who are performing at the same time, or with the rhythm of somebody who's giving a reading. And it was fascinating to see how you drew the connections, literally, with this black and white. It sounds so simple, and yet it's like you draw a whole world that connects everything that's happening around you. How did this start for you?
It's funny because we do try and overcomplicate things. And, you know, within the idea of, yeah, I draw, and it's something I love, and it's simply with a line. And but there is a lot of complexity in there, because to make a line look like you is absurdly hard. And how did I start? It's funny, I look back at my first writings or my first drawings that I did when I was younger, and I didn't know it was art at the time. It was just something I did to feel better. It's just something I did to get stuff out. And I look back at that stuff and I'm like, wow, like that person was lost, but they had an outlet. And that's how I started.
Your art, to me, the way you started, like you just said, you were helping yourself, you were finding yourself, and yeah, you were being found through your art. And that's how I started too. I mean, I know that there's a photo of you kind of standing with your siblings, and you're this brown-skinned, curly-haired little kid next to, you know, 4 blonde siblings. And I remember walking around with my mom, and people would always say, "Are you together? Are you together?" Because, yeah, you know, who's this white woman with this little kid, this little black kid? And that feeling of needing to find your place,
yeah,
it's amazing how that, you know, sparked this a line. You drew a line for yourself into belonging, into connection.
Yeah. And it's amazing. I look at a pen and I'm like, wow, you know, this pen has taken me around the world. This pen has allowed me to meet so many talented people. This pen has given me freedom. This pen has given me a future, given me a career. Mm. And, you know, I am lucky that I found what I love, because a pen is also very accessible. Mm. And mm-hmm, sometimes to find that thing that we love is inaccessible to us.
Right.
And I was just very gifted or lucky that a pen was my thing. Drawing is my thing. It is how I connect.
Yes.
Because it is two-way. I am the one drawing, but I'm drawing from the audience. I'm drawing through my experience. I'm drawing from life. And I'm drawing this in a way that feels right, it feels honest, it feels vulnerable, and it allows me to explore and be more you know, become a better version of myself.
Does that have significance for you, that word draw? Drawing?
Completely. And I love the word drawing, and, you know, some Americans kind of make fun of how I pronounce
drawing.
It.
Drawing. I love drawing. That's but, how I say it, drawing.
Drawing.
I say, listen, sweetheart,
like
don't
me.
Talk to the wrong Americans. Yeah. They'll steer you the wrong direction.
But, you know, I used to have this tagline, drawing on everything. Mm. And it means drawing metaphorically. It means drawing physically. It means drawing from the world. It means drawing on the world. And when I often, you know, talk to or give a talk, the first question I ask is, who in the room can draw? Put your hand up. Mm. And, you know, depending on what crowd you are, yeah, they're very shy, and probably like 5, 10, 15, if you're in a really creative crowd, maybe 20% of the audience will put their hand up. Mm. And then I say, well, how can you not do something as an adult that you did as a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 7-year-old, an 8-year-old, maybe even a 9, 10, 11-year-old. Mm. But what happened is along the way, you learned that you can't and someone else can.
Woof.
Perhaps a teacher or the parent was like, this is what a house looks like. This is what a dog looks like. And you look at your siblings or your friends and their house, or their dog looks like the teachers or the parents. And now you believe that you can't and they can. The problem with that is drawing is what makes us unique. Drawing is what makes us individuals. Mm. And if we train that out of people, that's why then we have a room of adults that believe they can't draw.
Right.
Of course you can draw. You've just stopped drawing from the world. You stop believing that you can draw. You stop believing that you can be yourself. You stop believing in uniqueness. You stop believing in individuality. You've stopped creating from your head to your hand in whatever way that happens, or whatever way that flows. And for me, what is really special about drawing is that you have to be open to allow it to flow. You know, you have to be open to allow these characters to be themselves. I have to be open to allow the lines to be what they want to be. You have to be open to allow yourself to be what you need to be. And if we stop people drawing at such a young age, or if we teach them that they can't and someone else can, we're creating these barriers, we're creating these boxes, we're creating these divides, we're creating these divisions. And there's a lot that we lose when we do that.
Yes.
You know, and I joke sometimes that, you know, you can only draw a stick figure. Great, me too.
Yes, I love it.
Let's collaborate.
Right, and collaboration might mean that you're like drawing images that are inspired by the sounds you're hearing around you, or like I've seen you work words into whatever you're drawing. Like the words are part of the drawing.
For me, words and lines, it's the same thing. And it's very interesting, you know, with my work, yes, there's characters and there's words and there's lines and there's a conversation and it's all integrated. And it's really interesting because people will come up to my work and they want to correct the words, you know, because I'm a proud dyslexic, but I also like playing with words and mixing with words and changing words around. But people bring their emotional baggage to the words, and they, you know, it's hard for them to see them in the way that I draw them sometimes. And I am drawing them. So sometimes I say, well, if you're going to correct my words, correct my lines, because it's the same thing. And then just this idea of vulnerability, like, I don't see myself as a performer. I see myself as someone that is able to connect with people, that is able to experience with people. And I do that because when you draw live, when you work live, when you work spontaneously, when you work intuitively, you cannot hide.
Nope.
You do not have time to hesitate. You do not
edits. There's no cut and paste.
There's no time to edit. There's no time to hesitate. There's no time to let insecurity sink in. There's no time to be anyone else but yourself. And now you repeat that, you repeat that, you repeat that, you repeat that. And yes, it is extremely vulnerable, but it also keeps you honest.
Yeah. There's a friend who wants to meet you, but... Okay, so I don't know if we really got to meet officially. Hi, my name is Nereida. Hi, Chantel. This is very exciting and everything. I just want to say, I don't mean to be like a fan and all of that stuff, but I know about your work with Kendrick Lamar. Oh my God, it's so dope. It's so dope.
You're hearing the music and you're flowing from your head to your hand.
Y'all just playing off each other. Y'all see what excites each other.
I just heard that, like, boom.
Yeah. Ooh. I seen your eyes lit up. when that sound came boom.
The line is, it's almost a reflection of the BPM.
Okay.
You know, and it's dancing with it.
Right. You're in my head and I'm in your head at the same time. It's dope.
He said something, and I think this was like something that I really got out of that you had to let go of your ego to connect with another person.
Yeah. And it was really great working with Kendrick. And, you know, he said something, he says, you know, Chantel's work feels like home. Mm. And also seeing Kendrick work really inspired me because, you know, and when we were just messing around before, he's making life beats and he's kind of making, you know, rambling to himself, making lyrics up. And I'm like, I do that because I've wanted to do music for such a long time, but I was scared or embarrassed. And then you see someone like Kendrick who, you know, is a genius at what he does. But you realize the creativity part or the process part or the construction of what you do, it is so simple. And even myself thinking about a different medium was very scared to do that. And it took me to see someone like Kendrick and see him in his process to be like, oh, that's it.
It demystifies it, doesn't it? It really does.
So I played my first show a few weeks ago at Rockwood Music
Hall. Oh, brilliant!
And piano and spoken word, singing. I was bright red for about the first 20 minutes because I was so embarrassed.
That's fantastic.
But it went really well.
I'm so excited. So I'm coming to see you play.
I don't know you, you don't know me. Then who are you and who are me? You watch too much TV, you watch too much TV. You watch too much, watch too much, watch too much, watch too much TV. I don't know you, you don't know me. Who are you?
You've come to see me play, which feels really fantastic. My name's Serene. You saw my show that Sarah does, Sell By Date. Thank you so much. But what I want to say is, and thinking about music, you went to Japan early in your art career and I believe had some music in your life there that you were sort of integrating the music thing even then. Is that right?
Yeah, I was integrating without knowing it at that time. And it's interesting, in art school in London, I met all these Japanese students that were studying in London, and I became that kid that hung out with all the Japanese kids and, you know, started watching Japanese movies and animation and got interested in Japan. And I think what pulled me to Japan was this sense of, you were Nihonjin or Gaijin, you're Japanese or you're a foreigner. And they didn't, you know, I say I'm from London. Oh, that's great.
Right. End of story.
Yeah. It's not what are you? And so being there, I actually started my art career in Japan. And I started it there because I didn't feel like I would have been successful in London. Because coming from a working class family and growing up, you're very aware of the system at play in the country that you grow up, and you're very aware of where you fall in with regards to how that system works. So going to somewhere like Japan was a complete blank canvas for me. And I kind of, you know, I love dancing, so we go to the clubs, and I just naturally ended up falling into a career of a VJ and doing live drawing to DJs and dancers and musicians. But what was different to what I was doing is that it was live and it was drawing. And there's a huge scene there, and there was and there still is, of VJing, where, you know, guys mix all these different clips and they have all these computers. And I just went and I drew. And I drew to the beat. And, you know, I'd zoom in and zoom out and the crowd would go, woo, and I would write, woo, and then zoom that in and zoom out again. And I see someone I knew and I wrote their name. And what happened is that the visuals became foreground instead of background. They became relevant. They became a moment. They became an experience. And that's how I started my career like that. And also starting my career in Japan, what it showed me being in such a space which was very craft-based, and craft-based over generations, you know, we're going to do this one thing, we're going to master it, and we're going to devote our life to it. And I, you know, in hindsight now, I look back and I was like, wow, I devoted my life to a line. You know, what's the most simple thing that I can master in this lifetime? And it's a line. You know, if I can do something that looks like me, that feels like me, that sounds like me, then I've accomplished something.
Beautiful. And so you have inspired me. There's someone who hasn't yet made her debut on the podcast, and now she's emboldened to come and say hello.
My name is Tomoko, and I have difficult story about I come from Japan, from Tokyo, but I feel like not like you. Like my art is difficult to, like my mother told me when I tell her I wanted to play jazz piano, maybe you will not have a husband. Huh. And I wanted to do my piano more than to have a husband. My mother, she will tell me, Tairu, it means like you have to be patient, be patient. But when I hear you, that you have to take opportunity. And my mother, she is afraid for me to don't be patient. But I think sometime in your life, you have to don't be patient.
Yeah.
Just take your pen, like you take your pen. I take my keyboard, my piano. And I wasn't, because I do not want to be patient, I want to be right now, live my life to be myself.
And, you know, lots of people will say you're brave, you know. And it's a thing where it's, you have to create your own opportunities. And you have to do that by using what you have access to, be it a piano or a keyboard or a pen or a microphone. You have to create your own opportunities because no one else is going to do that for you.
But I believe you. I believe when I hear you and I talk to you, I don't feel brave. You tell me I feel brave, but do you feel sometimes people tell you, Chantal, you're brave, but you don't feel brave on inside?
Yeah, all the time. That happens to me all the time. And you're successful, you're brave, you're this, and you don't feel it. You just have to, like you said, you're not sure how to find your way, but you found your way. Your way is through jazz, your way is through music, your way is through a keyboard, your way is through sharing what you do. That is how you find out who you are. That is how you find your way in life. And now you just have to make that and connect that and share that and repeat that and do that again and again and again and again. And then at some point, you might still not feel brave, but you can look back and see that you were brave.
I wanted to tell you something, that before I came here, actually I was not brave, because before I choose my music, I did try to be patient. Like I wanted to have a good life, I want my mother to be happy, so I tried to do what she want, just to get married and forget about music. But after that, I know I cannot. I have to leave my husband to make my dream, my music. And that's why it's so difficult. So if you have to leave something behind to have your dream, how do you know you made good decisions if maybe somebody is not happy for them?
Yeah, it's very tough. But you know what feels right. And what you have to leave behind is yourself. It's yourself as you are now. And it's the same for me. Like, it's very hard to say goodbye to yourself, to become the new you, to become your new self. And it's very uncomfortable to do that. But if you stay where you are, you flatline. And flatline, you might as well be dead, to be honest. So you need to trust yourself and leave yourself behind so that creatively, spiritually, and in any other way, you're doing this. And now that's where you grow. That's where you progress. That's where you develop. That's where you're going to move forward.
Chantal, domo arigatou gozaimasu.
Iie, dou itashimashite.
I know Tomoko really appreciated that encouragement from you, Chantal. And I did too. I've been thinking about how many times I've had to leave behind part of myself and go against what maybe someone else or even my whole culture thinks is good for me to become more of who I really am. You know, like as the kid of two doctors, I had a lot of fear that I was letting everyone down when I dropped out of college and became this untrained, inexperienced performer and writer. I had no idea what I was doing. But everything else in me, or everyone else in me, was pulling in this creative direction that I had to follow. Speaking of which way to go, when we come back, Bella's going to ask about learning to trust when something is a yes, when it's a no, and whether there's any such thing as a maybe, maybe.
So you know about our friends at Selected Shorts, right? Come on, you got to know about Selected Shorts. It's a public radio show and podcast where famous actors read great short stories. Every week, people like Paul Giamatti, Dan Stevens, and Claire Danes, they step on stage in front of an audience and read stories by authors like Margaret Atwood, Neil Gaiman, and John Updike.
Yes, to name only a few. And given the state of the world right now, getting lost in a great story is a much better way to handle stress than, say, getting lost in an entire box of papadums. I know you agree with that. But check out Selected Shorts every week on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and of course, selectedshorts.org.
I'm Sarah Jones. I am so glad you're here with me for this playdate with artist Chantel Martin. I first met Chantel when she was live drawing at an event where Lucius was playing. There were authors reading from these actually really poignant memoirs, and a psychiatrist was giving these mini therapy sessions on stage to anybody who was brave enough to share their neurosis with the audience. It was like some kind of nightmarish speed dating. I did not volunteer for that part. But the whole time, Chantel was there capturing all of this in a large-scale live drawing that the audience got to watch evolve as it happened. And I just remember thinking, she is drawing the laughter in the room right now, or she's drawing our fear or our sadness, our anger, whatever was in the room. And I remember wanting to ask her if other people tell her that they've been powerfully affected, like moved emotionally by her drawings.
Yeah, every day. It's weird for me because, someone came up to me and said, "You saved my life." You know, like I followed your work since middle school. And first I was like, wow, has my work been around that long?
And secondly, how old are you?
Secondly, like, wow. And for me, it's hard to hear that my work has an impact because, you know, to be honest, like I said, I'm still trying to leave myself behind. Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to leave, you know, that lost person behind. Mm-hmm. And as much as we progress and as much as we move forward, they're still there. Mm-hmm. They're still tugging at us. Mm-hmm. They're still trying to pull us back. And then it's interesting, you know, working in this world that isn't, you know, I make art, but I'm working in a world that isn't open and that isn't welcoming and mm-hmm. has this huge facade and is mm-hmm. full of a lot of BS mm-hmm. just to make people feel good about spending lots of money on it. Mm-hmm. And I see it as a little bit of my mission to unravel that, mm. to divorce ourselves from that. And it's as simple as things being a good fit or a bad fit. Mm. You know, I'm an artist that, you know, I have a museum show and mm-hmm. I've just done, you know, collaborations with some brands and I work with technology and I work with fashion and I'm working with architects. But the thing is, you know, people are like, oh, you know, that's so strange. You're working mm. with these different industries and mediums. I'm like, why is it strange? Mm. I didn't make those boxes and divisions. Mm. You did. Mm. You did. Mm-hmm. What I'm doing is I'm working in a way where this feels like a good fit. Mm-hmm. This feels like it's ticking my boxes. Mm-hmm. And we're making something that I would be proud of. Mm-hmm. A strong career is built on a foundation of no. Mm-hmm. Saying no to things that feel like no. Mm-hmm. And then once you've done that and you've built up a strong foundation, then you can build up by saying yes. But mm-hmm. you don't get to that abundance of yeses without that strong foundation of saying no.
Okay, so hi, Chantel. My name is Bella. We've totally met. Like, everything that you're talking about now, like that balancing that you're doing, and that it isn't really sort of about balance as much as it's just like about asking the clear question, yes or no, right? Like, it's not like, ooh, this is complicated. Like, maybe it's not. Maybe it's just simple. But what I want to ask you about is like, have you ever had like a situation where like first it was a yes and like you're kind of going down the road of yes and then all of a sudden you like hear this sound inside that's like, no, what do you do then? Like, how do you know when you can like change your mind? Like, do you have the right to change your mind as like an artist? Like, how do you do that?
Of course you can change your mind. And, you know, down the road, you're saying no because you felt like a no at the beginning. You just didn't listen to yourself.
Oh, it's like you're in my head. It's super upsetting.
And you know, I don't think it really, for me, in my experience, a yes doesn't really turn into a no, because like a yes is a yes. It works a lot the other way
maybe
around.
Maybe like a maybe turns into a no. Yeah. Have you ever had a maybe? I feel like you're like maybe proof. Are you like maybe proof?
I'm maybe proof.
Oh my God, how do you do that?
I don't know. I'm a maybe person, but you'll do those things that feel like a no and you're like, oh, maybe it's pain or maybe it's for a friend or maybe this or maybe that.
Yeah.
And then down the line, you're like, oh, why did I do that?
This is a no.
So you really just have to simplify. Okay, this is a yes, this is a no. And on the outside, it looks very sugar-coated and it looks very appealing. But if it says no, you just have to walk
just
away.
Say no.
Just walk away.
Just say no. It's totally like a 90s like anti-drug campaign.
But we all learn from experience. And you have to learn and you have to feel what it feels like not to listen to yourself.
But when you're my age, you don't have that much experience yet. So like, I just don't have that many like yeses and nos under my belt. And like, I think what's helpful about like meeting you is like, you're like a seriously like real person. Like, it feels like you, like, it just feels like you kind of really know like who you are in that way. And I know you talk about like feeling lost or like that the lost thing is a part of you, but do you feel like there's a point where like the found part, the like solid part, just started to dominate in you? And like, if you could give me a year when that's gonna happen, that would be really helpful.
You know, I think something that really helped me was, and I don't know if it sounds cliche or not, but when I moved to Japan, I went on a meditation retreat.
I
don't know if you've tried meditating yet or
sort of,
but what that taught me is it taught me to be more in touch with my senses. Because so I went on one of these, you know, remote islands in Japan, and I did a 10-day silent meditation retreat, and after like the fifth or sixth day, my hearing probably got about 30% better. What I realized at that time is like, oh wow, to survive, I've been blocking my senses off.
Wow.
To survive, I've been dialing things down. So how can you feel what a no feels like? And how can you know what a yes feels like if you've dialed down all your senses?
Yeah, it's like there's static on the line, like you can't hear.
Exactly. So what you can do now is help yourself to hear. And you can help yourself to hear by just trying to eat better, drink better, surround yourself with more positive people, by doing that, trying to find that thing that you love, trying to be less angry, trying to be more compassionate, try and be that person that picks up one piece of litter at some point.
Oh my God, Chantel. I can't write fast enough right now. Okay.
But the more you do that, the more you're going to be in touch with your senses, the more you're going to, as a default, find that path that you should be on, and the more you're going to be in touch with what a yes and what a no feels like, because you have to be able to feel it first to even let that guide you.
Okay, that's amazing. And like, just so you know, like Sarah Jones had like one of her guests was Sharon Salzberg, who's like this amazing meditation teacher, and she said like the same thing. Like, do you teach meditation?
I don't, but I draw.
And that's like meditative for you, right?
Drawing and walking is my meditation.
Aye, so share it. So, my name is Rashid.
Hey.
The feeling of, if I do this, I might fail. Did you ever have, I mean, I know you talking about the rock wood and everything, but I'm talking about something you know you good at, but maybe the world is changing or people's tastes change or something like that. You know, I come from an old school hip hop. How you pose no? Be true to yourself or whatever, like Savage Jones was saying. How you supposed to know if maybe you need to pack it up, you need to just let it go?
Well, the thing is being an artist is a really bad job decision or a really bad career choice. But if you're really dedicated to it, plan A has to be the same as plan B, plan C, plan D.
You gotta have plan alphabet.
Exactly. And right? I slept on couches, you know, people fed me, because I wouldn't do anything else. And at some point, it could seem silly, but at some point, it's the only way you get to the other side. You know, I have this analogy of how I am where I am. or how I'm continuing to be where I am is that, you know, I have this very cute little green rowboat, and, you know, I've got these two oars, and I row out to the middle of this gigantic lake. And then when I get there, I pull in the oars, I drop down my anchor, and I stand up in this little rowboat, and I rock and I rock and I rock and I rock and I work and I work and I work and I work and I rock and I rock and I rock and I rock. And what happens is these ripples start to appear, and they get bigger and they branch out, and eventually they go so far that I can't see them anymore. And eventually, I'm guessing what is happening is that they're hitting the edge of this gigantic lake, and then they're coming back to me in the form of press and opportunities and projects and collaborations and other kind of potential ideas. But what happens if I stop rocking? What happens if I stop working? Is it all stops?
It ain't no ripples in the water yeah. no more.
You Aye. Have to never ever stop. Aye. And you're always working. And what people don't see, because we don't expose the practice, or people aren't there with us for the whole way, is that they don't see you rocking. They don't see you working. They don't see that you've never, never, never stopped to be where you are.
All right. Now, I'm not going to lie. You gave me a heart attack at the beginning because I can't swim. I don't really like all that
water. I can't swim either.
Oh, all right. We need to take swim lessons. That's number one.
We've got those airbag things. That's what
we need it. All right, good. As long as I got a life jacket. But for real, you know what I'm saying? Black people right now, we need to learn how to swim anyway because we all know what's going to happen with this government we got going on. We might need to, you know what I'm saying, have a plan. They might try to ship your ass back to England, ship me, I don't know where. But nah, I'm going to try to be optimistic.
And also, let me say one more thing.
Yeah.
There's no rush.
Aight.
You gotta be patient.
So the patient thing, right? Cause the Japanese lady that was on here, Tomoko, she talking about she don't wanna be patient for the wrong thing. But you talking about we gotta be patient for the right thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. I feel that. Alright, Chantel. Yeah. Let me tell you something. You went from something that in New York, when I was a kid, you know what I'm saying? I'm a shorty running around. You could get arrested.
Yeah.
They put your ass in and they could ship your ass out to Rikers for the shit that, you know what I'm saying, we was doing. And now, you know what I'm saying, some people in Paris will give you some champagne for doing the same thing. That shit blew my mind. You know, they comfortable with a little bit more democracy, but not too much.
Yeah.
You know, they want to let in a few, but not everybody. I don't know if you got an opinion about that.
You know, I've got mixed opinions. And for, you know, I tagged when I was younger, and we all tag and go out there for different reasons. And I did it because I was angry at London. I was angry at the system.
Wow.
I was angry at how transparent it was and how hard it is to change it.
Yeah.
So by going out and tagging this character called Hangman that had a heart, you know, it had a heart, it had this potential, it had this future, but it was tied with this noose. It was tied to the system. It was tied.
Now, is it true Hangman used to be a businessman and then he left that behind so he could get free?
Yeah, that's So Hangman was this businessman.
I do my work. My fellow graffiti artists out there, you know what I'm saying?
But, and it was something that I did because, you know, it was about that system and growing up in that system and growing up. Where people don't imagine futures for you. They don't expose these things to you. They don't give you the vocabulary or the words to imagine these futures for yourself. So I had to get out of there and I had to go somewhere else. So, you know, I think these things can change.
Yeah.
But we have to invest that time. We have to make things more transparent. We have to call things out. We have to divorce ourselves from the system. We have to expose the system. We have to acknowledge that it's there in the first place to begin to move beyond it.
Yeah, I mean, like, we used to go out there just, like, to say, I exist, you know what I'm saying? Because y'all got on council estates, like, where you grew up at. We got the projects, same thing. And, you know, it's like they build these, you know, these boxes in the sky, and you just stuck in that box. That's how it felt. And just to make yourself like, hey, I got a name. I'm here, you know what I'm saying? But that's our art, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Just to be who we are in a world that say you ain't supposed to be here or you ain't good enough or all that.
We need to see people.
Yeah.
And everyone needs to practice this. You know, when you walk in the restroom and someone's cleaning, you need to say hi. You know, when you walk down the street and there's someone begging or something and you don't want to give them money, but you just nod. You know, when you're in positions, you just have to see people. And I think that's what we don't practice enough. You don't have to engage with them. You don't have to speak with them, but we need to see each other and we need to practice that.
You know, this is Sarah again. That idea of seeing and being seen, like just acknowledging. I mean, think about how crazy it is that for many of us, we live in cities where we step over human beings who are on a sidewalk, you know, living on a cardboard box, because it's the only way we can get through. I'm not suggesting we, you know, we all end up late for work because we're trying to rescue somebody. That's not realistic either. But it's so humanizing to be reminded that our natural state is to acknowledge each other.
And for me, that's a practice. And I really wish we practice this a lot more. You know, even when you get introduced with someone, they're like, oh, hi, thanks.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and they're not looking at you. Right. And
you just want to wear a business card over your face. Like, this is what I do. Is it good enough for you? If not, okay, fine. Let's not even say hello.
But it's so, like I said, and most of my practice is so simple. Mm. And it's about seeing people. It's about being vulnerable. It's about trying to be a better version of yourself. And I've kind of spoke about what that means to me.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't need to overcomplicate it. And we don't need to bring all this other baggage to it. And I think as soon as we start peeling all these layers away from it, we can only benefit from that. Well, why are we here if it's not to make and share?
Yes. Can you please draw that all over a t-shirt or curtains or Alexis or whatever will help us remember? That is what we are actually here for. Thank you, Chantel. And thank you for hanging out with me on this play date with Chantel Martin. You know, you can see some of her drawings at our website, pri.org/playdate, or you can find us at sarahjonesonline.com. Learn all about what Chantel has coming up, not only in her visual art world, but also with her burgeoning music career.
Playdate with Sarah Jones is a co-production of Sarah Jones and PRI. It's produced by Julie Burstein with sound design by Derek John.
Yes, and Kate Essig is our assistant producer and Anna Avalon is our production coordinator. You know, we would love it if you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And we love to see the reviews. Thanks, Narita. And I would actually love to hear what you think. This is Sarah. Leave us a comment or a review on iTunes. You can actually leave it for any one of us. We'll all get it. Bye.